I'm Dee Dee.
And I'm Jenny. And this is
Murder on My Street. All right, Jennifer, what street are we on tonight?
We are in a million-dollar townhouse on Swan Street in Washington, D.C., and we're rolling it back to August of 2006.
Oh, my gosh.
We're going to discuss the unsolved murder of Robert Eric Juan.
Okay.
Robert Eric Juan was born in New York City in 1974. I think we should start first by talking about what an amazing person Robert was.
Okay.
Robert Eric Juan was born in New York City in 1974. Reading about him, he was just this extremely driven, kind human being.
Okay.
At William and Mary College, he revived the 13 Club, whose members went around campus doing anonymous good deeds.
Aww.
Yes. And this is throughout his entire life. Everything that you read about was focused on kindness and giving back and community. He was just an amazing person. Wow. When he graduated in 1996, he was presented with the Algernon Sidney Sullivan Award, which was given out for excelling in characteristics of heart, mind, and helpfulness to others.
I didn't even know an award existed like that for just being a nice person.
Right.
I'll never.
Well, you have to be extremely nice.
I would never. Never.
So Robert was general counsel for Radio Free Asia, president-elect of the Asian Pacific American Bar Association, D.C., and general counsel to the Organization of Chinese Americans. He was very active in his community. Some of the many, many activities he was involved in, just reading everything he was involved in was exhausting. I don't know how people are this driven. I really admire them. I do a lot between full-time job and two podcasts and family stuff.
Exactly.
And CrossFit. Cult membership and all of that. No thing. But this guy was above and beyond. He served as chair of William and Mary Washington Council. He was a member of the Virginia Governor's Commission on Community and National Service and American Bar Association Public Education Committee, a board member of the Asian Pacific American Bar Association Educational Fund, and treasurer of the Asian Pacific American Bar Association, D.C.
So he just did all of the things.
Oh, yeah. He also was in charge of organizing a judicial clerkship program, mentoring law school students, and he helped to draft the OCA's personnel manual.
So how many hours in a day did he get? Because I only get 24, so I don't know. How do you get it all done?
He clearly went to Hogwarts for his regular schooling and had one of those time turners.
Exactly. He's got to. A wand or something. Sorting hat,
He met his wife, Catherine, who was also an attorney, at a conference in Philadelphia in 2002. She lived in Chicago, but that didn't dissuade Robert. He flew frequently to see her. And they were married in June of 2003. They ended up moving to Virginia, settled in a place called Oaktown, and they commuted together every day to their job.
I used to do that, me and Steven. I hated it.
You guys drove in, though, didn't you?
Yeah.
I think, well, first of all, they were newlyweds.
Yeah.
But when you're doing public transportation, that tends to also further bond you in ways. Yes. that having road rage cannot.
Yeah. Or having to wait for your husband. You say you're getting off. We're leaving at 4:45. You're waiting. It's 4:55. Where is he? We said we're going. I want to go home. You told, then it's an argument. Now it's an argument. I said 4:45. Well, somebody stop me in the hallway. You tell him to fuck off. You got to go. Your wife is waiting out in the parking lot. I'm sure they were very happy.
So on this particular day, well, leading up to this day, he, in this sounds like typical of someone who is driven like he is. So he's doing a seminar to further his knowledge in his career. That was going to go until 9 p.m. So he thought that it would be a good night for him to go meet the 10 p.m. crew at Radio Asia, introduce himself to them on that night, and just knock everything out at once.
Okay.
But if he did all of that and added it to his plate, by the time he got all the way back home to Oaktown, he was going to have barely enough time to shower and maybe get 6 hours of sleep if he went to bed right away. And I don't know who falls asleep. I know there are some of you out there that can just fall asleep as soon as your head hits the pillow. That's but that's not me.
Me. Lay down. That's it. Nighty night.
And then you get up at like two and then you sit straight up at like two in the morning and grab the Coke can next to you off the coffee table.
I don't
and
think
swirl
I
it around
that.
And put that back down. I did I not did make it. That shit up. I watched you do it. In the middle of the night, I watched you do it. You're gonna hold
Oh my God.
and deny it until you know what's going to happen is we're going to be in the afterlife together and I'm going to be waiting on you to finally get there with a smug look on my face because I'm going to be able to roll the tape and show you.
Roll it back, Jesus. Show her what she did. Oh, good. You're finally here. Okay. Me and Peter, we got something to show you. Oh, you didn't shake the Coke can in your sleep at 2 o'clock in the morning. Hit it, Peter.
and Dee Dee will be like, you know what? I can't. I don't have time. I got to meet my husband. I'm getting out. He's all he's waiting for me in the car.
I want to be excluded from the narrative.
Well, I am in full agreement with Robert. That is not something that I would want to do. I would try to find someone close to work to crash with. And so that's what he thought he would do. He ran it by Kathy, his wife, and she thought that that was a good idea. Mm-hmm. And so he made a few calls. The first friend that he called was a female friend, asked if he could crash at her place. For whatever reason, that was a no. She wasn't able to accommodate him. So he called his good friend, Joe Price, who he had been friends with since college. Joe lived in a townhome with his cousin, Victor, and their other partner, Dylan. They were in a polyamorous relationship. So I'm going to break this down for you because it's all going to come into play. Joe and Victor were a couple, and they were friends with Kathy and Robert. They had been to Kathy and Robert's wedding. Joe and Robert had kept in touch. So Joe and Victor were a couple. Joe and Dylan were in a dom sub relationship.
Got it.
With Dylan as the dominant and Joe as the sub. They described themselves as a family, and everyone who knew them said they were happy. This poly relationship was working for them.
Sure.
So Joe said, sure, you know what? Come on over. You can spend the night. Not a problem at all. We have a guest room.
Cool.
So Kathy helped him pack a bag that night. And on the morning of August 2nd, Robert and Kathy commuted together. Kathy remembers them kissing goodbye and him saying that he loved her. Robert finished the seminar, grabbed a quick sandwich with a friend, and he calls Kathy at 9:30 to tell her he's headed back to meet the night shift at Radio Free Asia. So it's a quick phone call. The timeline is confirmed by the coworker who attended the seminar with him and grabbed the sandwich with him. Okay. At 10:22 p.m., Robert's done with the meet and greet. He calls Joe real quick to let him know he was coming. Heads up, I'm on my way over. It's like an 8-minute ride. Nice and close. So by 10:30 p.m., Robert had arrived at the townhome. Victor was upstairs in bed. I guess he'd just gotten back from a trip and he'd had a good workout at the gym and he was tired. So he was upstairs in bed watching Project Runway when Robert arrived. So Joe and Dylan were there to greet him. So they give Robert some water and
can I tell you, Project Runway, not as good with what's her face.
Not as good with Heidi Klum.
No, the other one.
Oh, who's the new one?
That's married to a Kushner. What's her name?
I don't know. I don't watch that show. If you throw out a show, you need to know who the host is. If you're going to say you don't like somebody, know their name.
Carly Kloss? Is it Carly? Anyway, I like Heidi better than old girl that's on there now.
Well, Victor did too, because that was what he was watching.
Cool.
So Joe and Dylan and Robert have some small talk for about 30 minutes or so in the kitchen. Everyone was in bed by 11 p.m.
Okay.
At 11:49, the following call comes into 911.
Oh, God. My heart's sinking. Oh, no. Wow.
Yeah. So that call started 49 minutes after everyone went to bed. It was an hour and 19 minutes approximately after he arrived. He was pretty much dead already.
So it was Joe and...
So Victor made the phone call.
Victor made the phone call.
Yes. Joe was the one who was, quote unquote, staunching the blood.
Okay.
So we'll
okay.
get to that.
Okay.
According to Joe, he finished watching Project Runway with Victor, which puts him upstairs at 10:50 p.m. Everyone was in their rooms with the doors closed by 11. It was a hot night, so Joe had everyone keep their doors closed to keep the air running efficiently, which some people say is weird, but it's not weird to me. I've done that every place that I've lived in Southern California, where it's hot as hell, because you want to try to conserve, keep that room cool and keep everything running. Dylan says he took a sleeping pill and read for a little bit. He heard Robert take a shower down the hall. He heard the door close and the door latch, and then he fell asleep.
Okay.
According to Robert's phone records, two emails are drafted but never sent on his BlackBerry. One is to his wife, Kathy, indicating he had made it to the home, was going to shower and go to bed, and he would talk to her the next day. That was drafted at 11:05 and not sent.
Okay.
At 11:07, another email was drafted to a coworker confirming their lunch for the next day.
Okay, so kind of
also not sent. The alarm in the house, I guess this was a high crime. Well, I mean, it's DC. A high crime area. So everyone had alarms, but their alarm system was shut off that night for whatever reason. Even though the alarm was off, the doors would still chime if someone came in or out.
Right.
So Joe said, and Victor also corroborated, that they didn't really think that much of the chime. They thought it could be their basement renter, Sarah, who had been out for the night and was going to spend the night somewhere else, but they just figured, oh, she changed her mind or plans changed or whatever, and she just came home. They say that they hear three breathy grunts, but Joe later tells the paramedics it was a scream.
Okay.
They run downstairs to check on Robert. What? Why do you run straight to the guest room? And then they find Robert's been stabbed and isn't moving on the bed, and no one thinks to go check on Dylan.
Huh.
While the neighbor was watching the 11 p.m. news, he says he heard a, quote, desperate cry from the guest room. His bedroom is up against the wall to the guest room where Robert was staying. He doesn't know the exact time, but he placed it before 11:35 p.m. due to the reporter whose segment he was watching when he heard the cry.
Okay.
I that
so
911 call.
Yeah, so we've got a neighbor who hears something.
And if he heard it.
Yeah.
At 11:35 at the latest, and they don't call till 11:49. That's, well, we'll get back to that too.
Okay.
Everything's going to keep coming back where you're like, okay, that's weird. Okay. And then we'll talk about it more.
All right.
That 911 call was like the longest fucking 5 minutes of my life.
That really was very long.
And that, when you think about it, I think that's the fastest I've ever had paramedics show up.
Yeah. I mean, I've had, you know, I've had to call for the kid a couple of times. And I've been that frantic person on the other end.
Right, where it just seems like it's going to take
forever.
That 911 operator deserves sainthood. I mean, she was so calm.
It was unfortunate that she kept calling him ma'am.
But
you don't know these things.
No, we don't know how well her headset even worked. And
exactly. You know. But yeah, she was very, very good. Very good.
Now let's talk about the paramedics. So we have two paramedics who arrive on the scene. One who has been a paramedic for over a decade, and the other who has been a paramedic for 15 years. They arrive on the scene to find Victor standing on the doorstep, on the front steps, wearing a white bathrobe, which they thought was kind of weird, but whatever.
All right.
Some people sleep naked and you got to grab what you got to grab, right?
Yeah.
Paramedic one states that he asked what's going on to Victor, and Victor didn't answer him directly, but he heard that there's a stabbing victim on the second floor. Now, that's in the official affidavit, but the 911 call contradicts this because Victor actually shouts, "Help us, we need help."
Right.
And then goes on to tell them someone's been stabbed on the second floor. So maybe
the
paramedic didn't think he was talking to him because he had the phone still up to his ear. Maybe. I don't know. So both paramedics head up the stairs to the second floor where they encounter Dylan, also in a white bathrobe. Now remember, Dylan was the one on the second floor.
Right.
Across. So white bathrobes are apparently a thing to wear in this household. The paramedic asks again, what's going on? Dylan looks at him, but doesn't respond. Instead, he walks past him and into his bedroom. Now, my first thought is that that's so fucking weird.
Are they in shock?
That was my second thought immediately. And but also, you know, it could be shock. It could be the sleeping pill. It could be he just killed someone accidentally. I don't know. Could be he just murdered someone. Who fucking knows? But it's weird enough that the paramedics are getting the fucking creeps by now because they're actually going to mention it later.
Oh, my God.
So they enter the guest bedroom to find Joe in his underwear. So Joe's sitting on the edge of the bed, the opposite side of the bed as Robert. He's not touching him. His back is to the door.
Isn't he supposed to be applying pressure?
Right. Well, for the third fucking time, this paramedic asks what's going on. And Price said only, "I heard a scream."
Huh?
Yeah, no longer three breathy grunts. He heard a scream. Okay. He gets up and he moves sideways away from the bed. Now, the paramedic was so alarmed by the behavior that he was seeing. He's been a paramedic for a decade. He's been to hundreds of scenes involving violent crime victims. Yeah. And at those scenes, people are yelling about what happened. They're directing him towards the victim.
Right.
It's chaotic. They want to get the person help. At this scene, though, he said all three men looked freshly showered and are acting way too calm for friends of stabbing victim. He stated, and I'm going to quote him, They made the hair on the back of my neck stand up. He was so unnerved by this behavior that he went to the opposite side of the bed to attend to Robert so that he could keep his eye on Price. Whoa. Because he was scared that Price was going to stab him.
What?
Yes.
This is crazy.
Paramedic number two also observed that things were very wrong. She described a hole in Robert's chest large enough to fit your finger into, but there was virtually no blood anywhere. Not on the victim, hardly any on the bed, none on the floor, but anywhere in the room.
Victor on the call said he's been stabbed in his chest and his heart.
Yes.
Now, I'm thinking there is blood everywhere.
Right.
Everywhere. Because right. Even the dispatcher said, just keep putting towels. If that towel gets soaked, put another towel on. So she's also thinking there is a lot of blood. We've got to stop the bleeding. But you're telling me there's a finger-sized hole in his chest. And virtually no blood.
Yes.
What did they do to him?
And I'll post a picture of the towel when we post this story, because there's hardly any blood on the towel. Not like what you would expect for someone who had been stabbed in the heart, in the lungs, and in the abdomen.
Yeah.
And there's no disarray anywhere in the room. She said the body looked as if it had been stabbed, showered, and redressed.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
This is someone who's been a paramedic for 15 years, and this is a stabbing victim with hardly any blood. And it's going to get stranger, because when you get stabbed, first of all, you're not just going to sit there and let somebody stab you. You're going to fight them, right?
Right.
So she's saying there's no disarray in the room. He clearly wasn't fighting. There's no cuts on his hands.
So it doesn't look like he was like attacked and was defending himself.
No, he was laying on top of the sheets, his body at an angle across it. The bed is still made with the top sheet and comforter folded at a 45 degree angle, which, I mean, if it was a hot night and the air was struggling to run efficiently, it makes sense. You know, guys tend to run hotter than we do anyways.
Right.
And there would be nights where we would sleep with the air conditioning on, and I would turn it down to like 72 and be sleeping under the covers, and Eric is sleeping on top of the covers because he was just too hot. So it makes sense that he wasn't under the covers from that standpoint, but it's about the only thing that is going to make sense to me in all of this. His head is perfectly on his pillow. And by perfectly, I mean the only indentation on the pillow is literally where the back of his head is resting.
So it's like he was placed there.
Right. He was in a t-shirt and shorts that his wife packed for him. He's wearing his anti-teeth grinding mouth guard. Uh-huh. And anyone who has one of these knows you wait until you're literally crawling in sleep into bed and going to sleep
going
before
to
you
sleep.
Put that shit in.
Right.
Because it's annoying and you can't handle having that in your, or maybe that's just me, having it in your fucking mouth if you're going to do anything else. You've got to be, it's bad enough to be laying in bed with that.
Exactly.
You're just aware of it.
I usually end up taking mine out in the middle of the night.
So because of the stab wounds to the chest, they check for a pulse and there isn't one. His pupils are fixed and dilated. He has no respiration. There's no blood coming from the wound. So clearly none of these are a good sign. So they immediately place an EKG monitor on him, which shows him to be flatlined. There's no heart activity whatsoever. It probably happens if you get stabbed in the fucking heart.
Yeah, exactly.
Paramedic number one also notes the lack of blood on the victim. as if someone had cleaned up the blood. He does see, though, a light film of blood with striation marks, like someone had taken a towel and wiped down Robert's chest, which he thought was weird. So the paramedics transport him to the hospital, where he is officially pronounced dead at 12:25 a.m. on August 3rd, 2006, 36 minutes after Zaworski placed the call to 911, and an hour and 55 minutes after arriving at this house. So
within 2 hours of him arriving at that house, he is dead.
Yes. The paramedics will say he was dead when they got there. So that would be within an hour and 19 minutes of arriving at this house. He's dead. Killed by an intruder. According to Victor on the 911 call, had a knife from their kitchen.
Yeah.
While the paramedics were attending to Robert, the Metropolitan Police arrives on scene. They note immediately the expensive electronic equipment and other valuable items on display in the house. They notice that nothing in the guest room has been disturbed or is out of place. No indication the room had been ransacked or searched for valuables. In fact, both of Mr. Wan's wallets, because he had a dummy wallet with cash in it in case he ever got robbed, a Movado watch, and his BlackBerry, all on the table at the foot of the bed in plain sight of anyone coming through that door Dylan patched.
No, nobody broke in.
And the knife was on the nightstand next to the bed. Very courteous of the intruder to not take anything, to stab the guest, to leave
clean
the murder
up.
Weapon.
Wait, clean up, clean the body, not take anything. And oh, by the way, I'm just going to leave the knife right here on the bedstand so the nightstand, so they can easily find it.
Which Joe said a few times to the police, I picked the knife up off of Robert's chest, so there probably won't be any DNA from the killer on the knife. It will probably just be my DNA. Because, you know, Joe's helpful like that.
Why would you move anything? Why would you move anything? Why would you touch anything? And if you're, I mean, to render aid.
He said he pulled up Robert's shirt and that's when he saw the blood. But, you know, no one else saw the blood. Paramedics didn't see the blood. So the police officers also notice that there's been no violent struggle in the room or on the bed. And despite being stabbed three times, including once in the heart, there's only two small areas of blood on the bed. The blood pattern expert that would examine the photos of the scene later concluded the stains and patterns on the bed were inconsistent with a violent stabbing. Let's get to the autopsy, shall we?
Oh, no. Okay, it's more fucking weirdness.
The autopsy was performed on August 3rd. The ME noticed remarkably clean, symmetrical, uniform stab wounds. No defects, no drag marks, abrasions, or fishtailing. Each wound was inflicted at exactly the same angle, which I guess makes sense if you're a courteous intruder who's stabbing someone and leaving the murder weapon behind, maybe.
Right. Yeah. We're trying to be tidy.
The wounds appear to be, quote, methodically inflicted, not what you would expect from like a random attack or a burglary.
Right. Right.
There was also some hemorrhaging consistent with asphyxial event, such as suffocation with a pillow over the face. That's just an example of one of the ways that it could have been caused, because there was no indication of manual strangulation. No bruising or ligature marks. No, the hyoid bone was intact.
Okay.
So I have theories on that. I have a theory on that, a big one, but I don't know that I should ever voice it. So I may not even voice it on what I think actually happened to him and how he was asphyxiated. So he was stabbed in the heart, in the right lung, and in the abdomen. These wounds would have resulted in a large quantity of blood. This is all in the autopsy report. After examining the knife, he determines it's inconsistent with the wounds. So the fucking knife on the nightstand that was wiped on the towel was not the knife used to stab him.
Oh, my God.
Shit just keeps getting weirder.
What the hell?
Right. There were no defense wounds. There were, however, needle marks. On the left side of his neck, on the center of his chest, on his right foot, on the back of his left hand. According to the medical records and the interviews with the EMS workers and the nurses and doctors who worked on him at the hospital, these marks were not from anything that they did to him to try to save Robert. The ME determined that the needle puncture marks were caused pre-mortem, which makes them before the paramedics arrived.
So were they trying to inject him with something?
Maybe he was drugged. I don't know. According to the medical examiner, the knife wounds wouldn't have killed or rendered him unconscious immediately. So, since it's instinctive to protect yourself while you're being stabbed, and it's also instinctive to clutch at your chest and your abdomen stabbed and bleeding.
Right.
His conclusion was that he must have been incapacitated. They injected him with some type of incapacitating or paralytic drug. There was a lot of internal bleeding. He was digesting his own blood. This means he was alive for a period of time after the stab wounds were inflicted. So the ruling was cause of death, stab wounds of torso, manner of death, homicide.
Okay.
A standard toxicology test was performed on the samples that were taken from the body during the autopsy. The test screened for only the following drugs, though. Things like ethanol, acetone, methanol, isopropanol, amphetamines, barbiturates, benzodiazepines, cocaine, methadone, meth, opiates, GHB, and carbon monoxide. Also, two other things I couldn't pronounce, so I didn't say them. But everything was negative. It didn't matter. He said had they suspected drugging, they would have tested for other incapacitating or paralytic drugs. But I don't know how much that would have mattered either, because the pharmacist that I spoke to said, and I'm going to quote him, because he said, this is going to make me sound like a horrible person, but the reason GHB is the perfect date rape drug,
holy crap,
is because it acts quickly and it's out of the system quickly. So it can take effect within 45 minutes. It can be out within 3 to 10 hours. So if they gave him GHB in his water when he got there in the kitchen, that was at 10:30. He's pronounced dead at 12:30. And by the time they were drawing blood for the standard toxicology test, the GHB could have even been out of his system. But the pharmacist also said there are plenty of other drugs that can incapacitate or paralyze that if they're not tested for, are not going to be seen, not going to be suspected. He said the problem with that is, how did these people get a hold of them, though? Like, that's the other thing that you have to think about, is access to them.
Why?
Things like ketamine, things like GHB, he said, are going to be things you can get off the street.
Yeah.
But then somebody else said to me when we were discussing this case, because I was so tripped out by it all week long, I could not wait to talk to you about it. Somebody else said to me, you can get anything if you have the money.
True. It only costs money.
Mm-hmm. But if you know where to go.
I don't. What would be the motive?
That's what I keep coming back to.
I thought Robert was Joe's friend.
Yes. And became Joe and Victor's friend when they got together, and became Robert and Kathy's friends. So the four of them were friends when Robert and Kathy got together. Now, that wasn't the end of the autopsy, though.
Okay.
There were also swabs taken from his genitalia.
Mm-hmm.
Two swabs on the exterior of the anus, two on the interior of the rectum and the anal canal, and two swabs taken from the mouth and lip area.
Okay.
Semen was detected on all of the swabs, but the two taken from the mouth and lip area. DNA testing was done on the semen. The semen on and around his penis, from outside his anus, and from inside his anal canal were all Robert Wan's.
What? 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 Shut up. I'm hanging up. I'm hanging up. I'm done. I'm finished. That's the end. The end, period. No, 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 no.
I have in all capital letters at this point in my notes, let Dee Dee react.
What?
I knew.
What?
Right. I have been tripping out on this all week. Like, I get how it's down around
his
junk.
No, I'm not. This is not. No. No, it's not possible.
The medical examiner's conclusion was that Robert was alive but incapacitated at the time the stab wounds were inflicted. Even if he were merely restrained, he would likely have had indications of defensive wounds, blood on his hands, defects to his stabs. The wounds and internal bleeding would have put him in extreme pain and made it impossible for him to lay so perfectly still in the bed like he was found. He would have tried to get out of bed to seek help. Herein lies our mystery.
How did they do that? What were they doing? What were they doing? How were they doing it? My daughter's in the other room, or else I would have let go with so many profanities. I don't understand how it can't be. It can't be. It can't be. After that, I can't, my mind can't. That's it. It's full. It's full. That's it. I knew I should have had a margarita instead of this goddamn water. Robert, what happened? What was going on? Victor, Joe, Dylan, with the sleep. Was it Dylan? How is it his own?
It was Dylan, sure, with the milking machine in the guest room.
And so,
I don't know. We'll talk more about it. on the next episode.
I'm finished. I'm done. I'm dead. I've died. I've come back to life, and then I'm dead again. I am dead, dead, dead. I cannot believe this. All I know is that is some David Copperfield bullshit, magical shit. And I want to know how they fucking did it. Just like, how did David Copperfield get that elephant to disappear or the plane to reappear, whatever he did.
So we'll get to the rest. We'll get to the rest on the next episode, because there's still a lot more to unravel.
But how is it his own semen in his butthole?
We'll talk about some theories on the next one. We'll finish the rest. Tune in tomorrow.
Next week.
Bye.
Bye.